Jesus, little lamb.
Welcome to our Monday Sunday School with the Raised with Jesus podcast, a biblically Lutheran podcast for Toledo and beyond. In this episode of our Monday Sunday School, we are looking at our lesson here at Resurrection for this coming Sunday, September 15th, entering the Promised Land from Joshua chapter 3, chapter 4, and into the first part of chapter 5, reading selected verses beginning in Joshua chapter 3, verse 3. Joshua gave orders to the people. When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, and the priests and the Levites who are carrying it, you are to move out from your positions and follow it. This is when they're encamped at the Jordan River, and they're going to be crossing into the Promised Land. Verse 5. Joshua told the people, "Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you." He said to the priests, "Take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass on ahead of the people." So they took it up and went ahead of them. And the Lord said to Joshua, "Today I will begin to exalt you in the eyes of all Israel, so that they may know that I am with you, as I was with Moses. Tell the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant, when you reach the edge of the Jordan's waters, go and stand in the river." So when the people broke camp to cross the Jordan, the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. Now the Jordan is at flood stage all during harvest. Yet as soon as the priests who carried the ark reached the Jordan, and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap, a great distance away, at a town called Adam, in the vicinity of Zarethan, while the water flowing down to the Sea of Arabah, the Salt Sea, was completely cut off. So the people crossed over, opposite Jericho. The priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the middle of the Jordan, while all Israel passed by, until the whole nation had completed the crossing on dry ground. Chapter 4, Selected Verses. When the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, "Choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe, and tell them to take up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, from right where the priests stood, and to carry them over with you, and put them down at the place where you stay tonight." So Joshua called the 12 men he had appointed, one from each tribe, and said to them, "Go over before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan. Each of you is to take up a stone onto his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites, to serve as a sign among you. In the future, when your children ask you, 'What do these stones mean?' tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever." So the Israelites did as Joshua had commanded him. Picking it up in verse 10. Now the priests who had carried the ark remained standing in the middle of the Jordan until everything the Lord had commanded Joshua was done by the people, just as Moses had directed Joshua. The people hurried over, and as soon as all of them crossed, the ark of the Lord and the priests came to the other side, and the people were watching. The men of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh crossed over armed. That day, the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel. And then Joshua commanded the priests, as God had said, "Come up out of the Jordan." And the priests came up out of the river, carrying the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. No sooner had they set their feet on the dry ground than the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and ran at flood stage as before. Joshua said to the Israelites, after setting up the 12 stones at Gilgal, Joshua said, "In the future, when your descendants ask their fathers, 'What do these stones mean?' tell them, 'Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you until you had crossed over. The Lord your God did to the Jordan just what he had done to the Red Sea when he dried it up before us until we had crossed over. He did this so that all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful, and so that you might always fear the Lord your God." Chapter 5, Reading Selected Verses. Now when all the Amorite kings west of the Jordan, and all the Canaanite kings along the coast heard how the Lord had dried up the Jordan before the Israelites until we had crossed over, their hearts melted, and they no longer had the courage to face the Israelites. At that time the Lord said to Joshua, "Make flint knives and circumcise the Israelites again." So Joshua made flint knives and circumcised the Israelites at Gibeath Ha'araloth. Now this is why he did so. All those who came out of Egypt, all men of military age, died in the desert on the way after leaving Egypt. All the people that came out had been circumcised, but all the people born in the desert during the journey from Egypt had not. The Israelites had moved about in the desert 40 years until all the men who were of military age when they left Egypt had died, since they had not obeyed the Lord. That was our Sunday school lesson from last week, looking at Numbers chapter 13 and 14. For the Lord had sworn to them that they would not see the land that he had solemnly promised their fathers to give to us, a land flowing with milk and honey. So he raised up their sons in their place, and they were the ones Joshua circumcised. They were still uncircumcised because they had not been circumcised on the way. And after the whole nation had been circumcised, they remained where they were in camp until they were healed. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "Today I have rolled away the approach of Egypt from you." So that place has been called Gilgal to this day. Gilgal sounds like the Hebrew word for roll. On the evening of the 14th day of the month, while camped at Gilgal on the plains of Jericho, the Israelites celebrated the Passover. The day after the Passover, that very day, they ate some of the produce of the land, unleavened bread and roasted grain. The manna stopped the day after they ate this food from the land. There was no longer any manna for the Israelites, but that year they ate the produce of Canaan. This is the word of our God. Our commentary from the Bible History Commentary, an introduction to the book of Joshua. The book of Joshua maybe has another name for it that, you know, at least captures the theme. Israel comes home to Canaan. This title kind of brings out the main purpose of the book. Long, long before, the Lord had promised that he would give Canaan to Abraham's descendants as their home. As soon as he spoke that promise, Canaan was the possession of Abraham, then of Isaac, and then of Jacob, even though they remained sojourners and pilgrims in the land. Consider Hebrews chapter 11, verse 9. By faith, Abraham made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. All the Israelites were, by virtue of that divine promise, the inheritors of Canaan, even while they lived in a strange land for 400 years and wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. But at last they entered the promised land, drove out the Canaanite people from it, divided it among the 12 tribes, and made it their home. We could condense the purpose of the book of Joshua into one sentence. The book of Joshua shows that the Lord has proven faithful to his promise, though in his wisdom and in his love he had long deferred its fulfillment. Looking at Joshua chapter 3, 4, and 5, you might note, if you look at your paper Bible, I encourage you to read Joshua chapters 1 through 5, where Joshua had already sent spies into Canaan to scope out Jericho, and they had been hidden by Rahab. And Joshua chapter 1 is the account of how God had installed and encouraged Joshua in his office now as the leader of God's people. Then we get to chapter 3 here that we just finished reading, where they cross the Jordan River and they set up camp outside of Jericho, and the entire country is melting in fear. And so Joshua chapter 3, the miraculous crossing of the Jordan. It certainly bears a strong resemblance to the crossing of the Red Sea, but there are a few noteworthy differences that we'll highlight here. In the crossing of the Red Sea, the Lord's presence was indicated by the pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night. But here, the Ark of the Covenant, carried before the people by the priests, signifies the Lord's presence among them. It was the presence of almighty power, for the waters parted as soon as the feet of the priests touched them at the shore. The Lord announced before the parting of the Red Sea that he would gain glory for himself through the destruction of the Israelite army and the deliverance of Israel. You can refer back to Exodus chapter 14, especially verses 4 and 16 through 18, for an explanation of where God says this, that he would destroy the Israelites and gain glory, or he would destroy the Egyptians, rather, and gain glory for himself. And that same point is noted here. The day before the crossing of the Jordan River, the people were told to sanctify, or to consecrate yourselves. As verse 5 says, Joshua told the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you. They're supposed to prepare themselves through ceremonial washings and spiritual meditation on God's promises so that they might fully appreciate the miracle that the Lord performed the next day and that they would remember it with everlasting gratitude. The miraculous crossing was also to give the Israelites the assurance of two things. First, that the living God was among them. And secondly, that they would dispossess, kick out the tribes now holding the promised land. But the crossing of the Jordan was also to serve as a special purpose for Joshua. The Lord told him that this would be the first of many mighty deeds through which God would magnify or raise up or exalt Joshua in the eyes of Israel, as God says in chapter 3, verse 7, so that they may know that I am with you as I was with Moses. And that is that promise, that statement from God reaches its fulfillment in chapter 4, verse 14. That day the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they revered him all the days of his life, just as they had revered Moses. A similarity calls for our attention. Moses, in his Song of Triumph, predicted that the heathen kings, hearing of the Lord's mighty deed at the Red Sea, would be filled with terror and dread of the Israelites, from Moses' song in Exodus chapter 15. After the crossing of the Jordan River, the kings of Canaan were demoralized by the news of how the Lord had dried up the Jordan before the Israelites. Again, God's promise and God's work is fulfilled and glorified. We should understand correctly the remark about in verse 15 of chapter 3, when Joshua records, "Now the Jordan is at flood stage all during the harvest." The Jordan overflowing its banks all during the harvest. This was not our time of harvest, such as late summer and early fall, but it's early spring when the barley is harvested in the Holy Land. At that time, the Jordan would be at flood stage from the melting snow in the northern mountains. Chapter 4, we look at the memorial stones that God has Joshua tell the people to set up. And it presents, you know, very few problems or questions, really. There's this command to choose 12 men representing each tribe, and it had been talked about in chapter 3 and is repeated in chapter 4. But now the purpose. Each one of these men was to carry a stone from the middle of the Jordan River, where the priests who are carrying the Ark of the Covenant were standing. And these men were to carry the stone to the place where the Israelites would camp for the night. There those stones would be laid together as a rough kind of a monument, a memorial to Israel for all time, reminding them of their miraculous entry into the promised land of Canaan. Joshua also told the 12 men that it would be their responsibility to teach the children in Israel the meaning of this memorial when they would ask, "What do these stones mean?" The priests all the while remained standing in the middle of the riverbed. Note that here, Joshua set up a second memorial of 12 stones. The reader may be puzzled as to how this memorial could serve its purpose, thinking that the monument would be submerged and could not be seen. The explanation is that it would be seen when the river was at its low stages. Only after the people had all crossed to the point which was beyond the high water mark, only then did the priests carry the ark to the shore. As soon as their feet touched the high water mark, the wall of water that had stood some distance upriver broke, and the Jordan resumed its regular flow. That night Israel made camp at Gilgal. There, Gilgal's about 2 miles from Jericho. There, Joshua set up the first memorial of 12 stones. In exhorting the people to teach their children the meaning of this memorial, Joshua used words which show that the knowledge of the miracle commemorated here was not only to live on among them, so that you might always fear the Lord your God, but was to be spread by them to other nations, so that all the people of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful. And then we get into chapter 5, where the covenant is renewed through the circumcision of the people. Joshua 5. All the males among the children of Israel that came out of Egypt had been circumcised, but since then all except those 20 years and younger had died in the wilderness. Remember that they've just spent 40 years wandering the wilderness where God took them as a timeout and as punishment for their unfaithfulness and their sin. It had been estimated that at this point, only about one quarter of the males had been circumcised. Since circumcision was the sign and the seal of the covenant that the Lord had first made with Abraham, and then with his descendants at Mount Sinai, this circumcising at Gilgal meant a renewal of the covenant for the great majority of the Israelites. God himself declared this truth by telling Joshua, in verse 9 of chapter 5, "Today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from among you." That phrase, the reproach of Egypt, it's a very compact expression. It refers to the taunting that might come from the Egyptians if they would hear that the Lord had brought the Israelites out of Egypt only to strike them down in the wilderness. Moses had twice used the possibility of such a reproach from Egypt when he pleaded with the Lord not to destroy the people because of the golden calf in Exodus 32, and again because of the rebellion at Kadesh in Numbers chapter 14, which we looked at last week. Israel had remained God's people, but they were a people under God's chastening judgment. Besides, there hung over them this cloud that the majority of the males in their company lacked the sign and the seal of the covenant. Now that they had been circumcised, the Lord announced, the possibility of reproach by the Egyptians was removed. They were standing in the blessed covenant relationship with their Lord. The name of this place where the mass circumcision takes place memorializes this truth, for the word Gilgal means rolled away. Two other significant incidents mark the encampment at Gilgal. As far as we can tell, Israel has not celebrated the Passover since it had done so at Sinai in the second year after the Exodus, over 40, 41, 42 years previously. But now that Israel has been fully restored to the covenant relationship, the people once again observe the Passover. The Israelites had crossed the threshold of the promised land. There on the plains of Jericho, again, we remember what's coming. There on the plains of Jericho, the miraculous manna stops. From then on, the Lord fed them with the produce from the land of promise. Our catechism connection brings to mind the creative work of God, as God is still interacting with his creation, as he does so here when he intervenes supernaturally to prevent the waters of the Jordan and allowing the people to walk through the Jordan River on dry ground. Consider the first article of the Apostles' Creed. I believe in God the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth. And we confess in these that God the Father has not only given us all that we have and see with our eyes, but he also daily preserves and defends us from all evil and misfortune. He directs all sort of danger and disaster away from us. We confess that he does all of this out of pure love and goodness without our merit as a kind Father. He cares for us so that no evil falls upon us. And so, where do we see Jesus in this? We see God's promise to Abraham being fulfilled again, as the Lord wins glory for himself in conquering the Egyptians through the crossing of the Red Sea, as the Lord wins glory for himself in the conquering or the crossing of the Jordan River in the eventual conquest of Canaan. Even more so, we see that, you know, God is first of all faithful to his promise, the promise to Abraham, and he's faithful to his promises still today. And secondly, that, at least tangentially, I suppose, the crossing of the Red Sea is referred to in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 2, where Paul records, "They were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea." In a sense, the crossing of the Red Sea was an image of baptism, and that the believers, as they crossed the Red Sea, and, you know, the entire nation of Israelites, that they were believers, and that in a sense they were marked with God's redeeming power as God kept his promises and brought them through the water. And yet, in 1 Corinthians 10, we see that, you know, the bodies of them were scattered across the desert because of their unbelief. And so the warning is really wrapped up for us in the words of Joshua talking about these memorial stones, that the warning for us is, you have seen the truth, you have seen how God has kept his promises and acted in the past, and be sure to hold on to those promises, teach them to your children, so that so that nobody perishes through unbelief, as the Israelites who had crossed through the Red Sea did. There we go. That wraps up our Monday Sunday School. There we go. Be sure to tune in next week. Next week, Monday, we'll be looking at the fall of Jericho from Joshua chapter 6. God bless your day.